if something were true, then you could, you know, you could talk about it. You could agree with it or disagree with it, turn it upside down and figure out why and how it's true. Maybe it becomes, maybe it could even turn out to be profitable to you somehow. You could monetize the truth of it all. And you might notice that a bunch of organized religions have done just that. Presumed something to be true or stipulated it or asserted it as such and then monetized it. Make a lot of money. But if nothing is true, or let's say nothing in particular is true, and you are just you, whatever that might suggest, then there's no emphatic story to be told. There's no litany, liturgy, genesis, consequence, profitability, utility. There's no becoming. There's no malnourishment, insufficiency. There's no wonderful and arduous struggle to accomplish a thing that may be more true than what you think is true right now, like, you know, a search for enlightenment, for instance. But it turns out the poignant, if not palpable, discovery that nothing at all is true is not nearly as easy as we might think. Because we are so full, right, of presumption and genesis and consequence and the unbearable insecurities and apprehensions that accompany the idea that something is true or more true than this is. It's the curious foible of ideas themselves that create the imagination of comparison and therefore some kind of self-assessment that says, well, I know who I am, what I am, where I am, why. And then compare that to some other, let's say, idealized condition that I imagine I'm not presently experiencing. And then I'm in, right, more or less constant search of some other vague notion, which we presume has got to be better than this vague notion. But if this isn't true, meaning you can't really insist on what this is or isn't, it has the potential, curious potential, to absolutely flatline a search, an indication, a vector for something other than this. You could say that's what all the mindfulness tools throughout multiple cultures were inspired by, which was the, call it the release of becoming, the release of self-assessment, the release of and from any and all presumption about the nature or consequence or genesis of your present experience.
Could you say that the desire to nail down a given truth, that if that desire is gone, if you've gone beyond that desire, that it's not so much whether something is true or not, we just sort of let it fly. You
know? It's always been flying, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely out of control.
So why try to nail it?
The pilot and the co-pilot are either absolutely stoned or they were already left the plane. And so it's already flying. Just that way.
It seems like it's the desire to nail it down. To get it.
Yes, of course. I mean, that and a thousand other metaphors are appropriate for what drives us to investigate the nature of our present experience, to idealize it through the filter of being a primate, right? A born and consequential primate, and then want to improve one's lot experientially, financially, amorously, right? In all the ways that we seek to assert ourselves and enjoy the fruits of recognition. Really. Yeah, so we're so full of what appear to be really valuable, if not common sense, suggestions as to what this is and why it is, psychiatrically and spiritually and contemplatively and in a thousand other ways, that we really think something is true. And that I'm good for, I don't know, 25% of it, or whatever, wherever you think you are on the how much truth there is and how much belongs to you, you know, thing is. And if nothing's true, which could also be suggested as a revelation of the arbitrary and involuntary and evaporative nature of your present experience, right? If nothing is true, which can be demonstrated by what you're actually experiencing right now, that could turn out to be kind of a yahoo. It could be, you know.
So, if we're working under the assumption that nothing is true, isn't that in itself a truth? Isn't this paradoxical?
Well, yes. I mean, as a spoken assertion, which is what we're playing with, right? You know, words and ideas and the texture and the geometry of what that implies. You could say, yeah, that becomes a truth. But we're not really working with that as a de facto assertion. Okay. It's a dismantling nudge, not right what's true. Yeah, because we'd end up then in a, you know, obviously just another one of a million paradoxes of how could it be, you know, this but not that and that, but yeah. So the discovery, or let's say playing around with whether this is true, and that itself, of course, is a metaphor and most likely a poor one like most of them are. What we're doing is evoking interest and attention, right? Stimulating you as a luminous being capable of absolute fascination. Right. So when your fascination is lit up, right, and it's not overwhelmed by what you think is true, by ABC beliefs, right, by tautologies, then fascination has a profoundly different, you could say, impact or dimensionality as it appears in your experience as fascination, without that fascination having to have an object or a conclusion or something to agree or disagree with. Right?
Childlike wonder.
Yes. Childlike wonder. Adult-like wonder. Right? Yeah, because childlike wonder is, it's done for us. You know, if this is going to, if this is going to sprout, well, by now it's going to have to be adult-like wonder. Yeah, and adult-like wonder, thankfully, is not antithetical to childlike wonder, but it has the benefit, if you will, of a profound childlike innocence accompanied by, let's just say, the maturity of, right, an adult's capacity to investigate. Yeah. And investigate is, again, it's a textural journey, meaning it's a feeling journey, not necessarily a sentimental one, right? But that which is sensorial, sensate, supersensate. How do you know that you are so, or that this is so? Well, you feel it. You're feeling this. Right, you feel light, really. When you hear stuff, you're feeling the vibration of sound. When you think and come up with a beautiful idea or a not so good idea, you're actually feeling the presence of thinking in what you call one's consciousness, in the remarkable vague luminosity of your experience. Thinking appears and there's recognition. I would say that's feeling. Again, not sentiment, but your body appears, right, as feeling.
was thinking too that it's, you know, the dismantling of everything that we believe or that others believe, or that how we box ourselves and name ourselves and label. The more dismantling that people do, the more freeing it is when we come upon each other. You know, like,
yes.
If you come upon someone who's just, you know, that they've got these limitations of religion, and you can't talk to them about this, you can't talk to them about that.
No.
It's like you suddenly, you're closed up as well as them being closed up, because
yeah.
you've got to really watch what you say, where you tread. So the dismantling is just so freeing as far as human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question. You said nothing is true. You're talking about ideas. Being is true.
Okay. Doesn't say much, but sure. I mean, you could say being.
There is no truth.
Well, you could say being is synonymous with true, and true is synonymous with being. We haven't really added much, right?
Well, I was stuck on nothing is true. It doesn't really mean true with me.
Yeah. Well, even being is strange. I mean, you could say this is irrefutably so. Does that work as a bookmark for true?
I'm not sure I know what it means.
Well, what does true mean when you use true to define or to suggest being is true? What's the implication?
It is.
Yeah, there's a certain irrefutability. Yes.
I'll go with that.
Yeah. Right. So that's nice. The irrefutability of one's, you could say, firsthand experience is so.
Right.
Right. Good. Yeah. Sweet. Right. And that could suggest it's just as much untrue as it's true. Yeah. Well.
Does it mean about? You're implied that it can be proven when you say true, because obviously
maybe
you can't really prove anything.
Yeah, you can't prove a damn thing. So, not really. Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you say true, it's, I think of the scientific true where it can be. You
know, well,
even that can't be.
Yes. Proven. Yeah. You know, we use true. Often as a battering ram to place ourselves and everyone and everything else in some kind of hierarchical context, right? In which case, true is just it's a superficial form of whipping oneself into some kind of solidity that's not actually so. Yeah, right. And usually by, blurting out that nothing is true, the suggestion there is whatever you think, right? Ideas about it, right? Conclusions about it. Causes, genesis, reasons for. Yeah. Yes. And so in this kind of a discovery process, one turns one's attention or fascination to this irrefutability. Yeah, and maybe enjoys it, we could say, naked of ideation. And see how that encounter with oneself, right? Naked of ideation, irrefutably so. True is not even important any longer. You could say, how's it going? Right. Within the context, either for understanding the nature of suffering, or you could say relief, right? Or freedom from, exoneration of suffering. Or you could use that same kind of investigation to play around with some fanciful interest or motive that you may have for finding out what the fuck enlightenment might be. And that's high end, you know, that's really above my pay scale. And these, you know, these stories that you mentioned that we tend to hold and manufacture and cling to, they make it, all of these stories that we tell ourselves or others make it more impossible for us to really feel what this is than less impossible. And then when we encounter each other through the filtration of these, you know, archival encyclopedic citadels of story, we wonder if we can ever communicate. Yeah. So it's fun to...
it's down to house the weather, you know?
Safe. Yeah. And that can be pleasantly cordial, right? So, yeah, from that point of view, it's also kind of an investigation or a journey into what is intimacy. And that intimacy would be with the irrefutability that this is so. Right? That it's so, does that end it? And are we done? You know, maybe. This is so. Cool. Maybe I'll see you next week. Maybe never again. Or could we play around with the possibility of, oh, this is so, and, right, see if there's any yield. What does it present? How does it, I don't know, how does it make us feel, or how do we feel about it? Is there a journey at hand? That's the question, right? For this kind of conversation to have some purchase, right? Then you have to show up and have an interest, right? An affection, a fascination, curiosity about the nature of your own experience or what you believe is true, or make yourself available not just, you know, to me, but to yourself ultimately about the possibility of the unraveling of what you think is true, right? Because you have this majestic moment, and now this one, and now this one, and now this one, and they just don't quit. And so part of the question for a seeker, you know, this circle is not made of people just pulled out of Redner's randomly, right? This circle, if it occurs, is because there's a, you know, some fucking thing is going on that gives you an inspiration to show up and see what this feels like or looks like or what's spoken and how you relate to it. So that's a dynamic, right, process.
It's helpful to know, for me anyway, in daily life that, you know, this is it, that every waking moment is different, even though, you know, we can believe that we're driving down the same street every day, or that we're doing the same job every day. The realization that it's occurring every moment is freeing too, and it just makes life so much more enjoyable when you can say, I can look at this in another way.
Yes.
Yeah. This isn't the same street. The sun's coming in that window, and the, you know,
mm-hmm.
the view is different, and the trees are different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good you could drive into a tree. It's that good. Really?
Not that good.
Yeah, it can be.
Yes.
It can be. Yeah.
But that always gives me pause as to what the heck is going on.
Yes.
Just from moment to moment where you're like,
yeah,
all right, take a moment because mm-hmm. everything has got really weird. So.
Yeah. Yes.
What's yeah, going it, on right now in this it, moment?
That kind of depth or subtlety of observation of one's present experience can get weird fast. Yeah. You know, that could be, you know, one of the nefarious reasons why we function the way we imagine that we function, in terms of categorizing the world into a place of unbearable repetition instead of being gleefully overwhelmed by the weirdness of it all from moment to moment to moment without taking a prisoner. Yeah. Without pushing ourselves into a future that doesn't exist, or lamenting over a past that doesn't exist.
And we're so good at filtering things out that we drive down the same street on our way home from the market or from the job that we then box ourselves in to think this is the unbearable mundaneness of it all, and that each moment isn't different and it's all the same. And there we get, and we start looking for distractions and diversions and kicks and all consciousness altering mechanisms to free ourselves from that mundaneness. And it's just
yeah. And, you know, it's funny, we can report sincerely and somewhat accurately on, let's say, the way we typically find ourselves functioning from day to day. And we're not wrong. But when we do so in the presence of the next miraculous beatitude that is, you know, uncontainable and immeasurable, and call it didactic reflection, right? Didactic self-assessment can only function as a story presently told, right? And again, what you or any of us might be referring to through sincere self-reflection is a presently appearing, right, didactic investigation, which conjures in your consciousness as a reflection, right, on how you function prior to this moment. And so it becomes a sincere story told about us, right? And that wonderful piece of news occurs right here where your present miracle is, right, nonplussed and uncontainable. And you could say, as we dwell in the presumption of self, or the presumption of idea, the presumption of mind, on a near nonstop basis, and maybe except in dreaming or deep sleep, we are a living didactic reflection of a story told. When we plan, when we make appointments, when we talk to someone on the phone, when we go through our business day, when we entertain, right? When we meditate, right? You can feel, you can notice in yourself the rushing profundity, the expressive profundity of your irrefutability, expressing itself as a story told. Yeah. And so part of the fun then is to, let's say, become conscious. I don't want to be too presumptuous, you know. What the fuck does conscious mean? But conscious of the presence of your blossoming, right? The miracle of blossoming experience without the limitation of a story told. Without the attendant didactic.
Do you mean a past story?
No.
Or you mean an ongoing story?
Well, it's fun because, as Gary so wonderfully put, we can reflect on the way that we may have driven down a street and how we can either be present or distracted or, right, somewhere in between. And any reflection, whether it's internal, right, in the quietude of your meditation, or whether it's shared amongst friends, is a present story told, right? It's a present reflection. Yeah. That's fun to see. You're an art installation.
Isn't that like a dream state too, then? Because isn't that just a reflection of your subconscious telling a story that you pick up from the day? Or
sweet. Well, that who knows? That sounds wonderful, and sure, why not? But clearly, that's not all it is, right? Yeah. So any metaphor that we might have, depending on the discipline, you know, like a Jungian therapist might have a different take on it than a Freudian or than a Rogerian or, you know, you can name all of the, you know, the greats of human psychiatric development.
Well, if you're aware in the dream state, like lucid dreaming, isn't
yes.
that being conscious?
Well, I don't know what conscious is. No one can really know what it is, nor would it be possible to articulate it with any particular certainty. This is so. Here? Ah, that's all I got. You know? And yeah, and we can say, hey, you've had experience of the waking life. This might look something like it. Maybe not. Maybe someone here has had the experience of a dream, either a vague dream that you recall, you know, when you get up to pee, or a lucid one where you're like, you know, you're doing it, you know, back of the hands, whoop, you know, flying into places, meeting interesting people, right? Yeah, driving heavy machinery, running after monsters instead of away from them. You know, shit can happen in a lucid dream. You can really have fun. Or let's say even in deep sleep, when we may not have any ordinary recollection of what may have transpired in deep sleep, and yet some weird way deep sleep seems to be able to convey something to us, right, in the waking state, but we can't be quite sure what it is. And those metaphors are used quite frequently, that this is a lucid dream. Yeah. And that there's no real discrimination between what we would call waking, dreaming, or deep sleep. You know, some might go further and say, well, there's not even any meaningful discrimination between being alive versus not alive. You know, it depends. It kind of depends on how deeply we fall into the subfractal nature of current expression. Because that's way beneath what we might call conscious or subconscious. It's stranger than what we might refer to as dream or not dream.
Well, and whether you think you're a person living in a world.
Person living in a world. That can come unglued.
Dream, that can dream and be awake. And
yes. Right.
Do things.
It's so weird. I mean, everything that we hold dear about what we call a primate's existence on Earth having been born some 14 billion years after the so-called Big Bang event, the genesis of all creation, for, you know, at least the physicists suggested, you know,
not anymore.
Okay, yeah, it's gone.
That's
86 on the Big Bang.
No, it was on Facebook, so that means now it's
yes.
on Facebook. Today, no Big Bang Theory anymore.
Gone?
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking,
quantum,
someone dumped him out of the wheelchair and say, we're going to...
Yeah,
right, sure.
Over.
So now it's multiverse? What's the latest?
Oh, it's just not a singularity. It just goes on forever. There's no beginning and there's no end and there's...
Sweet.
Just been going on forever.
I'm glad they worked that out.
No.
Now I'm feeling better. How about you?
What's next?
Glad they're backing away from that Big Bang position.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It's getting me nervous.
Yeah, they could tell. They're like, they're on to us. Pick something else up.
White House.
That's
so, it's unraveling everything.
So it's fun, at least in my peculiar way of looking at things, that this irrefutability is at hand. But now I don't know what conscious is or unconscious is, or dreaming is, or wakefulness is, lucid or otherwise. I can't parse this, right? I can't particularize the miracle of present experience. Yeah, not as a creature, not as a human, not as a gender, not as a body, right? Not even as consciousness. Yeah, it can be a lot of fun. Because the shining is not inert, right? It's not static. The irrefutability, the shining of this irrefutability is, you know, richly wild, out of hand, untamable, doesn't quit, involuntarily appears, spontaneously, arbitrarily, involuntarily just keeps gushing forth And we have the, you could say the hubris to call it my life. Right? And in order to frame this miracle as my life, I have to adorn it with my memories and my preferences and my choices and my sorrows and the stuff in my closet and, you know, my cars, my partners. I have to adorn the present miracle with memory and ideas of myself in order to call it my life, when it's just as much not that. Yes, at a minimum. If you're going to go adorning,
better make it good.
Yeah.
It good.
Right. That's right. Waltzing Matilda. Yeah. Maybe you can see, or you have investigated in the. I guess we're still alive. Who knows? Doesn't matter. We're live here. This is just vanity. Forgive me. You know, to do you want to go into the control thing, really? Really? We can. I mean, it's
a... No, I think there's just so much that we don't know, and there's so much out there that, you know.
Yeah.
It's just got to be so vast beyond our comprehension.
Sure.
That, you know, it just feels limiting to be in this body.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's a real
more connections in the Milky Way galaxy. How is this limiting? Yeah. Not that we're a brain or a person.
You start with the remarkable irrefutability of your own present experience. You can't start. There's nothing before that. Anything that's after that is a lie. Truly. So when we feel, for good measure, the vastness, the impossibility of it all, right? And contrast an insight into the impossibility of it all with the likes of me, right? It's easy to get befuddled. Very. So you're assigning, right, to yourself smallitudinously, right? See, yeah, and that's contrived. You see, that's bullshit. That you can have an instinct of the impossibility of it all suggests that you might have someone in a high place that's, you know, you can call, or that actually turns out to be you. But it's a really neat threshold, that threshold. Because if I'm a primate on Earth, whether multiverse or Big Bang, not important, then we self-accuse and subscribe to being, right, of a certain...
tiny being in a gigantic universe.
Something like that. Yeah. And then we imagine the contrast that the smallness over here can't possibly have any kind of intimacy or relationship with the impossibility of it all, and that might create some lamentation, some sorrow, some delicious nirvanic longing. And then we might go in search of a remedy for that imagination by crossing the great ocean or talking to someone that wears robes, you know, right? Trying to find an expert that might have a little bit more of the vastness under their cape than you do. But it's not the case. It's just not. All the healers and everyone they healed are fucking dead. All of the great meditators of the past have been long ago eaten by maggots. What? Show me the exalted soul, either historically or perhaps even presently alive, that has some advantage. There's none. There's just none.
In what?
Well, that's the question. In what would be some linkage between the impossibility of it all and, you know, let's say your present experience?
I can show you.
Yeah.
Ego death. Like when you dose really high on psychedelics
and yes.
feel the universe.
Yeah.
Isn't that being in the know?
Being in the...
Like the know, I guess. Because yeah. you realize that you're not your body.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. I mean, you know, any realization that dismantles imaginary boundary fields could turn out to be very useful. Maybe a little frightening, maybe a little exhilarating, you know, maybe a little strange.
Terrifying, because you're like, what the hell is happening? I'm leaving my body. But
yeah, it could be terrifying. Why not? Yep.
But it's there. It's available for everybody to dive into.
You know, it being the truth of it, or it being the drug that elicits it?
It being the truth of it?
Yeah. I'm down with that. But the drug is too, you know. Mm-hmm. Why not? Yeah, that's what you could say that's what we play around with here, is the very strange availability of these kinds of, you know, revelations. Without making too much of them, you know, because an early stage encounter with I'm not the body can really kick your ass for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying, fun, thrilling, you know, the emotive relationship to it will change and mutate as it will. And then, if there's a then and there's not, somehow you become, what would you say, cordially acquainted with the nature of your own present miracle. In a more relaxed, perhaps sanguine, I say disinterested manner. You see?
I don't think you can say disinterested, because why? Like what? No, hang on. Can you rephrase that?
Yeah, no, but we'll try. When I like to use the word disinterested, it's a way of suggesting, oh, here this is, and I don't know what it is, and I'm not that excited even anymore about that I thought I was a body, then learned that I wasn't a body. You know what I mean? In order to be terrified by something or enamored or something or influenced by something, you still have to hold some fascination with the contrast, right?
Sure.
Right. But if there's no contrast... Then you swing into perfect disinterest.
So is that like Zen then? Like that's being in the moment totally and fully? You don't care?
Being in the moment totally unfolding sounds like something a Zen master might say, and you know, you spoke it very well. But I'm pretty disinterested in that as well. I mean, this is so weird, right? That even having an interest that, oh! Oh, this is unfolding in the moment. Fuck me. This is like, oh my God, right? And that's fun. I mean, you know, kill it. It's wonderful. But it only inures or occurs in that way by virtue of contrast. Without the contrast. Zen masters can just fuck off. Everyone can fuck off in a good way, in a loving way. Really, in a totally loving way, because this has no contrast.
Okay.
Yeah. And yet, you can find immeasurable contrast. I mean, you know, look at someone's face or look at a square inch of carpet, you know, the color, the texture. No matter where you look, whether you're magnifying your senses or not magnifying your senses, you're going to be overwhelmed with more contrast than you can throw a stick at. Completely obliterated by contrast. And no moment has any duration whatsoever. So all there is improvisational contrast. But there is no real improvisational contrast. It's symptomatic of nothing at all. That's why delusion has such a kick. That's why you could say it's difficult to wake up from the seductive reasoning of delusion, because this has remarkable contrast where there's actually none. So it's easy to pick up the slightest grain of dust, body, not body, right? hallucinogenic revelation, driving on a familiar street, anything, and think that something has just occurred, something perhaps marvelous has just occurred, something I want to put in take-home box, you know?
And that sort of gets back to interest again, because to me, when I think of contrast, it's like, let there be contrast, that's fine. But when your interest...
Is that what God said in the beginning?
Yeah, that's fine.
Let there be contrast.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But it's the interest where you sort of like, ooh, you know, you want to take it somewhere. You want to like dive down and take it apart a little bit. That's what it seems to me that sort of short circuits the whole deal.
It's incredible that we can have, call it a conversation, where you can examine the genesis of present experience and look so carefully and keenly at it, arising as this, right, perfectly strange improvisational moment, and not have anything to say. Nothing certainly conclusive. Nothing that really that can be relied upon as what's true and what's not true, or that has any durable contrast. Right? Whatever you say about this, well, that was 2 million years ago, because it's now, it's this now. Right? So anything that's idealized, or not even idealized, anything that occurs in what we call the miraculous nature of mentation, of didactic, right, consideration, is just a magnificent blasphemy. In that way, there's the suggestion that nothing's really true, because nothing has sufficient durability. Because all you've got is, you know, mutagenic weirdness. That's the observation of the, I would call it the irrefutability of your present experience. It's just the strange mutagenic weirdness.
Can we label emotions as true? Like, love as a concept was felt just as strongly by, I don't know, somebody who lived in the Stone Age as it is now. Isn't that one of those, like, overarching...
Kind sir, you may construct innumerable hypothetical universes at hand with no limitation. I love it. But, or and, yes. See, why single out love, either present love or Stone Age love?
No, don't single it out. Just use it as like an example of an emotion.
Okay, so there are emotions, right? Mm-hmm. Something going on that we call emotion. Mm-hmm. And those are true?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, everything that's irrefutably appearing as an inclusivity, right, a remarkable inclusivity could suggest that no matter what it is that's appearing, emotive or otherwise, is true, is so.
Cool. That's great. Doesn't that get us a step closer to understanding?
No, it can't possibly get you a step closer to what you already are. If you're already that which is irrefutable and undigestible, anything that you throw in the mix as a metaphor is going to not necessarily get you any closer. You're already a done deal. You're already absolute random weirdness. How could you get any closer? And how could some idea of something be a bridge to get you closer to what you already are?
And love is just really a label. You could say life, you know, but, right? You could kind of...
Well, I mean, not so much the word, but, like...
The feeling.
Yeah.
But, I mean, couldn't you say that life is that feeling, too? It's just, like, if you feel love from someone, you also feel life. If you feel the life of them, right?
Okay.
I don't know. I kind of, sometimes I think they're going to be interchangeable. When you talk about it as a feeling or as a beingness, we also label that as life. I don't know, I'm just kind of throwing that out.
Yeah, sure, let's go with that. Because then, like, all emotions are then interchangeable with the idea.
It's energy, life, love, you know, just depending on how we've labeled it, the universe is pulsing with something. So it's pulsing with life or pulsing with love, pulsing with, right? I mean, don't we just give names to that pulsing?
God.
Yeah,
you could say that the if there's evidence of the irrefutability of your present experience, it could feel like pulsing. Yeah. It's pushy. It is. It's very pushy.
It's pushy to say it's pulsing?
No, it's pushy.
Oh, the universe is pushy?
Well, present experience is pushy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not chill.
No.
It's pushy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's
pulsing. It's what?
It does not relent.
It no, that's right. It will not. That's right. So the fact of you, or anyone for that matter, or the fact of this, is already irrefutably, irretrievably, right, unutterably so. We don't know what it is. Thank goodness for that. And so now you don't need a metaphoric bridge to get any closer to the fact that it's so. Hi, so, done. Yeah. Hi, so, sweet, done. Yeah. Yeah, to get closer to a thing, you have to have an idea about where you are now and another idea about that there might be someplace else for you to be. And so one conjures a bridge and maybe, you know, love or Kensho or a mantra, call it what you will, could act as a bridge, but only metaphorically so. Playing around with whatever this is in this way, at least in my experience and perhaps in the experience of some others, sneaks up on you. It undermines in a nonviolent manner any idea that you're having a present experience, or that you can frame your present experience in really any way whatsoever. And as we become curiously released from the fetish, the impulse, the seduction of framing our present experience, then all of the fuel that we may have once had to go on a miraculous journey is just gone. It's a strange kind of geometry, right? One undermines any and all presumption about what is presently occurring. And then that whatever it is that's occurring or not occurring becomes profoundly, autonomously nourishing. And as this it reveals itself to us as profoundly and autonomously nourishing, then the interest of trying to get enlightened doesn't have any interest. There's no interest anymore. There's no excitement. There's no purchase. But it is a little bit rare, especially when you can contrast it to how many marvelous religious and spiritual systems and New Age systems and things for purchase that attempt to convince you that they are a bridge to something higher and better and deeper than what you might already be already, right? So it is rare to come in through the back door where the password is as simple as Om, rather than try to find the password by going out into your life and spending a lot of money, right? Sitting on a lot of cushions or doing a lot of japa or doing Byron Katie's work or swimming through the morass of, you know, solutions that will finally deliver you to the self that you have always and already been. So we just slip in the back door. That's all. This is a hacker's group. We are fucking hacking reality with a really simple password called bullshit. Simple password. Yeah.
It does save money.
It does. It can save money. Oh, it can save a lot of money, a lot of grief. You might not meet as many cool new age guys and gals with whom you can have a temporary tryst, but still, that we might have outgrown that by now anyway. Who's to say?
It's like speed skimming. Bullshit. Yeah,
that's right.
Bullshit.
That's bullshit. Right. Right. You see that the curious urgency that we have for this can't be it. I have to engage in profound representational endeavor, right? Spiritual, yogic, miraculous, Western occult representational endeavor, so that then this is it for the likes of me. You see? It's very seductive that way. But it's also possible that you don't have to enroll in the original histrionic presumption, which is this isn't it. Right? If you don't enroll somehow in the original histrionic mistake that this isn't it, then this is it. And you can still play around with the profound vitality of yourself, the curiosity, the wonder, right?
What if you're wrong?
If you're wrong?
What if you're wrong?
Sweet. You have to be wrong. That's what this is all about. What this is all about is knock yourself out and be wrong for as long as it takes to be wrong. And every time you're wrong, it's a notch in your gun belt. You know, it's a notch. That's how you discover this. You don't discover this by being right, because this isn't anything, so that you can't be right about it. The way that you discover this is by exhausting all the ways in which you're wrong. You got to start somewhere. Right?
Okay.
Or wrong.
You're not saying this, hackers, it's not a methodology, but this hacking through the back door.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not saying don't, like, what's that old 60s game show behind, you had to pick door number one, door number two, door number three?
To make a deal. Let's make a deal.
So you're not opposed to going through the front door, trying opening the front doors either.
No.
Matrix Energetics is 900 and some bucks.
But yeah.
You can get your mind blown, right?
Yeah. You can get your mind blown temporarily by all of those things. You can. And if you got the money and the inspiration and, you know, they're speaking to you, spend the money, you go, you know, get mind blown. I mean, that's the T-shirt, get mind blown.
Right. You get one for your fit in the course.
That's right. You get one of get mind blown. Yeah, for sure. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're not mutually exclusive. You can get mind blown, right, in the so-called world of mind-blowing things to subscribe to. At the same time, were there a time that you sneak in the back door and use the magic password?
I just did that. Been on a nut bread. I did it.
Nice. There you go.
Both at the same time. It was amazing.
You're amazing.
That's incredible. Thank you.
Was anyone else seeing that?
Yeah.
See, it comes.
The tarot there.
Everything. Right? Everything. Everything. Yeah. Yeah. This is an absolute inclusivity. Yeah. And to participate in the entertainment of dancing with the inclusivity is the miracle of your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of it, you know, the serendipity kind of depends on what it is that's calling you. What is it that might be calling you to take a different glimmer, a different glimpse of your present experience? I don't know. But if it's present, if that invitation is present, something has, you know, presented you with an invitation and is calling you, in a manner of speaking, to make a discovery, right? That's a miracle. That's grace. That's beautiful. How you respond to it is going to be involuntary and spontaneously occurring, And the fruits of what you find by responding to that call are also going to be completely unpredictable, right? From moment to moment. I mean, one could turn out to go for fun to a Matrix Energetics weekend, have their mind blown, enroll for certification, like most of these programs want you to do, right? They want you to enroll you in certification. Now you're an annuity.
Well, it's a good old capitalist upsell.
Yeah, right? The upsell, right. And so then it's possible that you could actually be as good or even better than Richard Bartlett, the founder, at facilitating really profound, exotic healing or spiritual experiences for people in your office in Doylestown.
Hopefully you can quit your day job.
You can quit. That'll become your new day job.
And that's what most people are after.
And you might be such a brilliant practitioner, so naturally, you know, gifted as an orator or a practitioner or a writer, whatever, that you might attract notoriety and celebrity. You might turn out to be like, a celebrity enlightened guy like Eckhart, you know, Tolle. You might get a phone call from Oprah Winfrey. Fuck me, that rocks. Yeah.
We were talking about it on Saturday. I just watched the 7-minute YouTube on it. So he asked me, his question was,
it's a contemporary healing life improvement, you know, methodology, which is based loosely on particle wave theory. And is taught by a very, very charismatic, unusual guy who can whip large audiences into an absolute frenzy of complete hilarity, which is worth the price of admission just for that.
People he certifies, not so much in my experience.
Yeah. What is this if it's not an idea? And the thrill, the challenge of, can we say, occupying or considering, feeling one's experience without any idea is the back door. That's the hacker's approach. Then the myth of becoming and the myth of psychological time and the myth of improvement or accomplishing some idealized spiritual or secular goal is or can be absolutely flatlined. Like here, like this, like now. And as we become accustomed to ourselves, free from any idea, that can turn out to be a very palpable encounter, contemplation,
enlightenment.
It could be. Could turn out to be exactly that. I know that'd be fucked up, but it's possible. Yeah.
So how do you fill the spaces?
Well, they're already miraculously filled without you lifting a finger. All that's left of you really is fascination. When we don't notice, which is common, right? That we don't notice that I'm just if I don't notice that I am disembodied fascination, then it's easy for me to be concerned about how I'm going to fill the spaces. Because there seems to be so much time that I don't, know what to do with. Right? But, what we call boredom or restlessness or what to do about. Is a symptom of, right, didactic representation. It's not real. It's conjured. And the one of the transmutative elements or observations is, well, there are no spaces to fill. There's no idle time. There's no gap. Nonstop disembodied fascination.
Just being fascinated with, oh, okay, this is what's occurring now. Okay, this is what's occurring now. Okay, this is what's occurring now.
In the Vipassana tradition, they use a technique called noting. Noting is kind of like a breath meditation, right? It's a form of nostril meditation. If you're really good at following the breath, really, really subtle with it, right? You're not distracted, and it's like, oh my God, in breath and out breath, and every little nano, micro, minuscule nuance of in breath and out breath can just, you know, wipe your slate clean, send you into, you know, fucking bliss party you may never be seen or heard from again. And you can do that same kind of, call it concentrated intimacy with noting. This is happening, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening, right? But even that's too gross, because what's happening? Well, nothing. It's your ideas that are happening. What this actually is not happening. Your ideas are happening. What this is, not happening. So a lot, you could say, has to do with the granularity of how you are experiencing your own experience, right? The depth and the intimacy and the subtlety with which your own magical powers of fascination look at you, as in right now, right? And if you don't have a single idea, this is fucked up. In a good way. And you don't even have to rely on some kind of, you know, noting or jhanic breath meditation or Vipassana-styled dismantling for this to be already exactly what it is. You feel this with your globality. You feel this with your inclusivity. You feel this already unencumbered. And that intelligence is non-dual. That intelligence is fully inclusive. You're no longer occupying the, dare I say, misery of being a didactic reporter. And this is always this, so you're welcome to it 24/7, even on major holidays. I've noticed that it's particularly strong on President's Day. I don't know why.
President's Day.
Yeah, Presence's Day. Yeah.
So when we speak of this, it seems like you could say consciousness, perhaps. This sounds external, you know, when I think this, although it doesn't have to be that way, of course.
Yes.
But, I mean, consciousness is equally vague to me, kind of, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it does come with a lot of overtones.
I sometimes like to refer to it as vegan tomato pie.
But nobody knows what you're talking about. So.
That's why I call it that. It's gotten me out of many a jam. Hey, vegan tomato pie, gotta run.
How about them Phillies?
Exactly.
Vegan tomato pie.
Yeah, exactly. See ya. Sure, calling this, call it by any name. It will make sure that it's on time for dinner.
I mean, consciousness is, I mean, it's a, I don't know, I would say a vantage point.
I hear you. Sure it is.
I mean, I don't know if it is.
Nirsagadatta liked to call it the absolute, right?
Yeah. Well, the absolute, but
that's too royal.
Well, kind of. I mean, you know, I have no idea what's absolute for you.
You have no idea. Period.
Yeah.
Call that what you will.
New work.
Fair enough. You see, again, we're so good at effusive representation. Ego, if there were such a thing, and there's not, is merely the movement of, right, didactic orientation, reporting. It's nothing. It's nothing at all. It doesn't mean you have to, you know, make any effort to whittle your ego down to size so that people like you better. You know, be as egomaniacal as you've always enjoyed being. What the fuck? Some people like you anyway. You know, just as you are. Is there any point doing something about your fucking ego? I've never really gotten that, maybe because I've got a big one or a small one, and I don't, you know, who knows? Okay. It's pretty clear that everyone's an egomaniac, right? And some are genocidally that way. And some you can count on, you know, to get you a nickel bag when you're in a pinch. LSD and its cousins.
Rule.
Is that what you're going to say?
Rule.
This wasn't a finish the sentence.
Sorry. I thought it was like Mad Libs.
They're very tricky, like mushrooms and ayahuasca and DMT. Very, very
yes.
tricky.
Yes.
Because they all... they're all of a certain kind of a signature, right? It's like marijuana produces a certain kind of bardo, right? Mushrooms create a bardo. LSD creates a bardo. Ayahuasca creates a bardo. DMT, heroin, right? Alcohol, showering every day.
I enjoy marijuana and showering every day. Sometimes together.
Damn, that went out again. Stop smoking in the shower.
You're gonna ask me to.
Yeah, we heard that.
And
that's in a short
there's time. There's no ultimate. There's no ultimate destination for this. Another way of suggesting or playing around with what might be true or not true. There is no ultimate destination for how this can conjure and solicit bardo realms, which are completely consuming, right? There's no end. It has no limit. And so that makes it maybe frustrating or liberating that you won't find anything other than this, as in right now. And right here, exactly as it's presenting to you, just like this.
Okay.
I mean, you still might like to do LSD, but you're not going to find anything.
I mean, LSD is not
extra special.
Not important, really.
What? Okay, never mind.
There can be an observation for lack of a better word. Presently intimate view of each so-called moment just evaporating or mutating. Ambiguous, irresolvable, liquid, improvisational, without consequence. That view is dynamic, invigorating, fascinating, simple. It doesn't take a position, doesn't have a plateau. It's immersive.
Seems to be simply in nature. There are just so many examples of that. If you're looking at a flowing river or a current or a it's evaporating, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's just constantly moving.
Yeah.
The constant change.
Yeah. Wind, rivers, you know, everything. It's the impermanence of it.
Yeah.
Evaporating, moving.
Yeah. Yes. And even indoors, in what appears to be a somewhat relaxed entourage, it's the same. It's not so evocative, right? It's not so outwardly demonstrative. Right? It's a little more introverted.
But we still have that craving. So instead of going out and watching the flittering as it happens, we go down and turn the TV. I mean, that's the craziness of it. Because we're still, there's still that need for news, novel. As we get about turning the TV on, and then it's like stale.
Yeah.
It's staleness.
Well, is even in the midst of banal entertainments that we're also good at, isn't the luminous revelation of yourself present? You know, you couldn't enjoy the TV, whether it was a good episode or a disappointing episode, without your inherent luminosity having an encounter.
It's all part of the same improvisational principle.
The
eddies of the river and the season 3 episode 16 of Mike and Molly, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Here we go. Truth confession.
Learn a lot.
Yeah.
Really? Should I come to your house? Oh, and okay. Get started? I knew I was missing something. The bachelor, that's what I need.
Okay, marijuana, shower, bachelor.
And banana nut bread. Can I combine those? Yeah. That's it.
I'm good. Right.
Should definitely sell that.
I am replete. There's a, you know, a very powerful myth, right? And that powerful myth is, with all this, you know, miraculous input, right? Data downloading, sensual encounter, right? Mental encounter. It's just constant flux, right? So, oh, I mean, even in the subtlest of moments, it's like, oh my God, really? It's just an overwhelming profuseness of, I don't even, you know, who knows what to call this. And we have, who knows, a certain kind of habit, I don't know, of blotting it out, dampening it down, removing ourselves from really tactile intimacy to just to kind of get a break from how, you know, weirdly luminous and fractal and unhinged we are. So it's like we try to create a certain kind of a safety or comfort zone of, whew, it's just me. I got plans. I'm good. Which is a bizarre kind of compensation for, oh my God, it doesn't stop. It won't quit. Oh my God, it's me again. Right. Which is really what it actually is, but we don't really want to touch that. So,
everyone's up looking like a lot of people on the street.
Yeah, really. It could be a zombie apocalypse. Yeah.
You can see I was like, cool.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
But it's, you know, it's not. It's not really possible to track or articulate anything that's causal. I mean, a human being is a really complex, right, compilation of who knows what. But you can't hold the body or the bones or the juices or the, you can't, you don't know what to hold responsible for this. How strange it is. Right? So we might use a, you know, a shotgun metaphor like, well, consciousness. I know what this is, man. You know, it's consciousness. But what? You know, a short multi-syllabic word is not going to do it, is it? For how bizarre this is? No. So part of the yoga, part of the journey to play around this way is, I don't know, it's a form of becoming acquainted with a certain way of feeling your present experience, speaking about present experience, evoking belief systems that may be, you know, hidden, stashed away, and maybe watch them come out to play, right? And the simple texture of becoming acquainted with your presently effervescing nature without assigning anything to yourself or accusing yourself of anything or thinking that you're in a condition and you're sure of that condition and the condition is subpar and, right, you're going to therefore make a profound commitment to a different condition.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, to see what condition my condition is in. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in. Yeah. Right.
Can't think of that song without thinking of the Big Lebowski.
Mm-hmm.
So, soundtrack, part of the soundtrack.
This won't stop conjuring. It's exquisitely magnificent beyond measure. As an apparatus or a medium of conjuring. And let's say it's only natural that we interpret the impersonal miracle of conjuring as I. Then all the scurrying gets set in motion. The conjuring is impersonally appearing. It's evocative beyond repair. A sense of I, you could say, arises spontaneously from the miracle of the conjuring and what appears to be a consciousness that's on the receiving end of the conjuring, right? So by really leaning into the conjuring as intimately as we can approach it, the conviction that we had a moment ago of being a disparate consciousness on the receiving end of the conjuring will abate, will evaporate, because our view is, right, non-dual evocation of the conjuring. And that's just pure non-egoic fascination. And we're with this all the time, right? We're never not absolutely animated and in love with the miracle of the conjuring, which I take to be myself. So we're playing around then with the same, call it body of evidence, right? The luminous weirdness of the conjuring. And that you are miraculously capable of being the conjuring, feeling the conjuring, noticing the conjuring, and effervescing perhaps as a disparate creature navigating, right, the vicissitudes of your life on earth. Come on, is this a party or what? Right? It's a total fucking party. Yeah. And it's also curiously possible that you peer right into the conjuring and see that it's not you. so that the conjuring, the presence of the conjuring, does not convey an irrefutable conviction of self, which is right the you could call it the pain or the suffering of duality, right? Self and other, right? All insecurity, all apprehension, you could say, is inexorably linked to the conviction of self and other. Yeah. And we get that because the conjuring is magnificent, marvelous, really good at what it does. And if it feels like conveying a sense of separate self anywhere in the room, okay, you're not going to beat its ass. No way. No way can you, right, outsmart, outwit, overpower, seduce the conjuring. It's fucking got you. But you can see it. Don't ask me how or why. You can. You can kick back in the miracle of your own self and go, fuck me. This conjuring kicks ass. And by virtue of a intimate view, palpable, textural, miraculous, available, affectionate, vital view right into the belly of the conjuring, you also discover that you're not it.
This whole language of me and that or whatever's out there just seems to be just not, just no place. I mean, there's the conjuring, and there is this, you know, there's this non-conjuring self. You can call it, I guess, a self or
yeah,
whatever, consciousness, you know.
As a body, as a person, as a mind, with agendas, right, with consequence, plans, future and past. The conjuring has created, mm-hmm. all right, the appearance of an individuated animus. Mm-hmm. That's samsara. Even before crappy circumstances and events may occur, long before crappy circumstances may occur, that you take this present conjuring as a creature is, right, is the ground of samsara, the ground of sorrow. So many religious, spiritual, New Age remedies mistakenly tried to give you a false sense of hope that you can still be the creature but have game on. But Tony Robbins is happy.
Like outwit the conjurer.
Thank you. Yes. All of the sales make an implied promise that you can outwit the conjuring. Game on. Got this. But you can't. It's too good. But by virtue of seeing the miraculous, effervescent, radiant, what the fuck, improvisational, what the fuck, that the conjuring is so good at, then you're no longer, or possible that you're no longer identified as a consequence of the conjuring as a creature. You're like, whoa, I am conjuring, right? The big I am that I am, right, is like, this conjures. Fuck me.
Well, even like the awareness and the daring to call it, to name the recognize the conjuring,
yes,
is like a radical,
absolutely,
in itself,
absolutely radical, yes, absolutely radical. And our
because
intelligence,
the conjuring wants you to not,
yeah,
grant that it's got you by the short hair.
That's right. The conjuring has you as long as you fail to recognize the profundity of the conjuring. As long as we associate and assign or accuse as creature, the conjuring remains, you could say, hidden in plain sight, but still
it wants you to hidden. Go around thinking, I cannot miss the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's right.
It's one of the million things.
Well, at least it's true when it comes. I mean, that was the one true thing that we were looking for, is that I cannot miss the Super Bowl. Yeah. I knew there was something true. Finally.
So we finally got the bedrock.
Thank God. And wings. Yeah. That's right. As a creature, which is an arbitrary, call it, symptom of the conjuring, you're not going to work this out. It's likely that it's never going to be fully satisfying to you, and you won't know why. You'll have this chronic, strange, existential panic, existential discomfort. You won't know why, because you're not you, because you're the conjuring and not the conjuring.
Can we just be a part of it all?
Why be a part of it all? Right. Right.
Yeah, I grew comfortable with being a part.
Uh-huh.
And not being so, and maybe this is just my imagination.
What else could it be? I mean, it's not right or wrong, but, you know, we're all ears.
My imagination that,
yeah.
I didn't identify with self so much as an I, as a we, and feel part of the universe and, the tree hugging moment where you are the tree.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just that
yes.
You get to the point where we're all carbon, we're all this, we're all that, we all have this. So the we-ness of it all, why can't it just, instead of being the object of the conjuring or the conjuring, just...
Or as my kind of sister-in-law would say, the hive mind.
Yes, but again,
I'm still trying to get past the kind of sister-in-law.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Long story.
She's a long-time pro.
We're absolutely welcome, with no entrance fee, to make of this what we will. Moment to moment, big, small, connected, I, we, they, am not.
Kind to sister-in-law.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Be worship. Anything.
And it hit me when you said, it should be appearing as ego and
yep.
Or not, And I guess being a seeker for as long as I have, and probably as long as all of us have, it's like, can we get away from that word ego? Ego is bad.
So absurd.
Ego is bad.
I know.
Don't go there.
The whole thing is absurd. God. Spending even 1 second doing something about your ego is a big waste of time.
It's futile anyway.
Duh. Yeah. Right. Resistance is futile. We are the Borg. We will assimilate you. Resistance is futile.
But in so much as it gets you into story, hopefully you'll see that it's going... And just that revelation is helpful.
Yeah.
No, this is just a story.
You don't have to say this is just a story. We know that, and it's all is forgiven.
We know that nothing anyone says is true.
Around me, everyone's like, well, this is just a story. It's like, I get that. I mean, really, you don't have to make any excuses. Okay. What's on your mind?
I'm going to try and outsmart it, right?
Yeah.
Which
watch me. Watch me. I'm going to outsmart.
So, there does seem to be, as Peter said, a level of maturity.
Yes.
Lack of a better word.
Right.
That, as you said, it's not... does not seem likely that somebody from wherever will be, and so our judgment would show up here and be able to kind of navigate this conversation.
Yes.
However, that being said, who knows if they can't either, but I was thinking there seems to be something about the observer.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any kind of point to that? Like you're observing the conjurer. Oh, that's fascinating.
The sense of being an observer is a marvelous expression or symptom of the conjuring.
It's just more conjuring.
Yes.
Fuck me.
No, that's what I've been trying to say to you, is fuck you. I mean, fuck me. Yeah. Right.
Well, how do you get out of this and fill spaces?
And
you get frustrated because you look back
at a minimum
day and you say,
you could become homicidal.
God, I got caught in that stupid story of just stupidity and other people's stupidity.
And why wait till the end of the day?
I'm saying.
Pick it up in the morning.
Yeah. Turn on your computer, log into Facebook, and
really.
It starts all over.
It starts all over again.
Make sure you're well caffeinated.
We're very accustomed to being, let's say, humorously keen on our experience. Let's say throughout the day or throughout the life. The conjuring, which is also a misnomer, and the animus that the conjuring bestows, right? Profound animus, and the capacity of didactic rumination, of memory, of abstraction, of hypotheticals, of preference, of discernment, of incredible subtle vocabulary to speak about the nature of present experience. Yeah? I mean, it's woo, woo! It's on tap. It's all on tap. It's always all on tap. And it only hypnagogically suggests that there's an individuated consciousness over there, over here. It's not actual. That's the breaking of what we call, let's say, you know, the egoic, right? Or duality of self and not self. Is a revelation of this conjuring as a non-dual inclusivity that's doing exactly what it's doing right now, right? So-called over here. And then disinterest is like an enzyme, like a grease. It's a solvent. So disinterest permits you to continue to remain fascinated and relaxed and fascinated and relaxed, childlike, without taking a position in the face of a nonstop onslaught of conjuring. Not so easy. Right? Because the conjuring is so profound. It's so libidinal. It's so fantastic that if it feels like suggesting that there's a you over here, you don't remember that it didn't give you a choice, right? Hey, Jamie, you feel like being a you, or you feel like being like, you know, unabashedly enlightened? How about it? Right? You don't remember being given a, right? So all you've got is what appears to be the present luminosity of the conjuring. Without an idea, without a position, without insisting on a consequence or a genesis, that's okay. Conjuring's cool. No hook. No hook. No position. Fuck me, conjuring. Oh. Whoa.
No purpose.
No purpose.
And that can be really, really depressing for someone who's on their deathbed going, what? What was was that?
But doesn't that occur?
Yeah.
That we, you know, those in the field that speak about, right, hospice or death and near death or after da 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 da, often speak about a cathartic, rapid transition from an incredible despair to an incredible elation. So the revelation is capable of both, right? By contrast, it could be despairing. How did I spent my whole life as a dumb fuck idiot when this was always, right? And so you have a few moments of like, God, did I fuck up? And then the light comes in and you're like, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, that's over.
You know? Yeah, the despair probably didn't last that long. But who knows? Everyone has their, you know, own peculiar relationship with their physical dying. Yeah. I mean, from a, you know, Buddhist and other point of view, meditation on death, meditation at the burning ghats, meditation on spooks and disembodied elementals is encouraged to, you know, untether and unravel from that, the tragedy of having one's life be a waste of time, right? And, I mean, Buddhists will say, this is a precious human birth. Don't fuck up, right? This is a precious human birth. Don't waste time. So for them, it might be, you know, hitting the cushion, hitting the japa, hitting the vipassana, hitting the jhanic practice, hitting whatever it is, you know, to really engage in the fascination of discovering that this is just a non-dual conjuring and tag, you're not it. And we come to this, you could say, invitation when we come in the most peculiar of ways. Right? If the invitation comes, then at some point one would be wise to respond to the invitation. And then weird shit like this shows up as a way that you might find nourishing or valuable to respond to your invitation. But your entire life is, right, in your face as a way for you to respond to the invitation that you're not what you think you are. This is, you know, kind of just a way of socializing. Meditation's good. Thanks for coming.